So we spent the last 5 weeks looking at the Ten Commandments, which of course were written maybe 3,000 years ago. We're not sure when. They were rules for people who had been nomads who were finally settling down. So they were edicts for behavior to keep the peace. Rules of any kind are training wheels. They're about doing. We like to think we're more focused on being. Turns out the Ten Commandments are about that too. Without the training wheels, those commandments are about living in divine consciousness. And so I promised last week that I would go back through the ten pretty quickly to talk about how they lead us to divine consciousness and then talk about the 11th commandment. So the first commandment was no other gods before me. God is all there is, one presence and one power. There is no God but God. That is the definition of divine consciousness, living from that sense of oneness with all things. And if we can do that, we've got all the other commandments covered. Second, do not worship false idols, whether it's a statue or money or romance. Stay focused on the spiritual path. Seek first the kingdom of heaven. Keep your mind stayed on spirit. Third, do not use the Lord's name in vain. At the burning bush, God said his name is, I am that I am. When we use the words I am, we are decreeing who and what we are. So we attach to the words I am only the truth about our divinity. We don't take I am in vain by attaching to it criticism or complaints about ourselves. The fourth was honor the Sabbath. It's a time of realignment, prayer, renewing our minds. A Sabbath, a time apart, refreshes our divine consciousness. It strengthens us to deal with the world and each other. So those are the first four. They're about relating to God. The rest are about relating to each other. The fifth is honor your father and mother. We said, metaphysically, we are the parent of our own lives. We mold and shape our experiences with thought the way a parent molds and shapes a child. Yeah, right. And our thoughts are equally unruly. Sixth, thou shalt not kill. And this ended with a complete shift in consciousness. Jesus said, love your enemy, but when you do that, he's no longer your enemy. So in both of those, all the divine consciousness is about compassion. No matter what someone else does, they still deserve to be honored and not killed, even with our words, even with our thoughts. The seventh is not committing adultery. Something unadulterated is pure. Unpolluted thought is divine consciousness. Is somebody getting her some water, please? Like, okay. It's okay. Just we can help. I thought that's where Brian went. Okay. I've been there. I know how that feels. Here he comes. So the eighth is thou shalt not steal. The need to steal is based on a belief in lack. The commandment leads us to an awareness of an abundant universe. Ninth, do not bear false witness, which is not just about lying. It's about how we show up. How do we bear witness to the rest of the world? Are we showing up as the Christ? And then the tenth was coveting. Do not covet what someone else has, because that too is based in a belief in lack. Coveting, though, means to desire passionately, and there's nothing wrong with that. What we desire most passionately is already within. It's our divine connection. What we really covet is an awareness of that power and presence. So the first four commandments are about our relationship with God. The other six are about how we treat each other and the consciousness we hold. And if you missed those talks, they are on the Unity of Wimberley website. They are also podcasts on iTunes. But there's an 11th commandment, or maybe 11-12. Jesus boiled these 10 down to two sentences. He was so good at that. This was centuries later. Jesus, as usual, was being questioned by Pharisees who were sticklers for the law, constantly trying to trip him up. Of course, they all knew the law of Moses and the commandments. So this is from the book of Matthew, chapter 22. They gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, ask Jesus. I think it's hilarious that even the Bible specifies it was a lawyer. One of them, a lawyer, asked Jesus a question to test him, because you know how lawyers are. The Bible doesn't say that. Teacher, the lawyer said, which commandment in the law is the greatest? Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Well, the law and the prophets constitute pretty much the whole Hebrew Bible. So Jesus is saying all scripture, the parts that are law, the parts that are prophecy, boil down to this. Love God, yourself, and others. That is living in divine consciousness. So let's break this down. What is love? Okay, there's a question for the ages. Poets, priests, sages have tried to answer that or describe love. And love is such a broad word in the English language. We love our children. We love pizza. We love this weather. Is love a feeling? Is it an action? Is it a state of mind? Is love something we do or something we be or both? And what does it mean to love God? That was easier when I thought of God as a benevolent dictator watching and judging and protecting me, Daddy God. My definition of God now is this force field of energy, the love and intelligence at the base of the universe, life and light, all that is. It's an intriguing concept, but it's hard to love. It's hard to get my arms around it. So I was asking myself, do I love God? And of course, I got all tangled up in my thoughts. How many of you have been told you think too much? Okay, we'll get to that. We know from the StrengthsFinders test that we're a bunch of thinkers. I decided that what I love is not a supreme being, but the availability of the divine. And it takes many forms. When I get still and quiet, the presence is right there. When I seek out other people, the divine is in them too. I hear it in what they say. I see it in what they do. I feel it in their love. Sometimes I imagine angels and I love them. Sometimes the divine is ideas and I love ideas. The divine is always available as comfort and guidance, and I love and appreciate those expressions of God. I wrote in this week's newsletter about spiritual intelligence. It's a new book by Cindy Wigglesworth. Some of you know her in Houston. She came across a definition of love that she's used ever since. She said, love is a bird with two wings, compassion and wisdom. And it takes both to love in balance. When we love other people, we're offering them compassion and wisdom. But that's also what we receive when we experience divine love. Whether we envision it coming from a supreme being, or love welling up from within, or a light that surrounds us, a love that enfolds us, love comes to us as compassion and wisdom. And we in turn love others. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, first, how do you love yourself? Not easy for everyone. I believe Jesus was telling us to love ourselves when he said, don't you know you are God's? When he said, it's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Don't worry about tomorrow. When he explained that we are one with the Father, we're the light of the world, that we could do anything he could do. The I am of our being is the Christ within. It ought to be easier to love ourselves knowing all of that. But how? I've been wrestling with this a long time. Self-love is not just believing I'm okay and you're okay. That's nice. It's not just liking myself no matter what my age or weight, although that makes a difference. It's not setting boundaries and refusing to be treated badly by someone, although that's important. It is not, for me, looking into my own eyes in the mirror and saying I love you, although some people swear by that. Self-love, this is what I think today. Self-love is allowing myself to express more fully. Just as we give our children, our partners, our friends the freedom to be who they came here to be, we do that for ourselves too. We make the arrangements for self-expression. So looking back at my life, I see that as a progression. The different turning points, whatever the details, were times that I began to express more fully. Like switching from journalism to ministry, I became more of me. So for some of you, it's been moving to a new part of the country or moving here, leaving a bad relationship or finding a good one, leaving the corporate or academic world, some of you. The story is incidental to the purpose, which was to open our lives to fuller expression of the Christ within, our God self, our divine essence. Giving ourselves that freedom is self-love. Self-love is creating the conditions to express our strengths and talents. And we love our neighbors the way we love ourselves. In Luke's version of this story, the same lawyer had a follow-up question. He said, okay, if I love the Lord with all my heart and soul and strength and mind, and my neighbor is myself, who is my neighbor? You know Jesus' answer? He told another story. He told the story of the Good Samaritan. There was a man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was set upon by robbers and beaten and left for dead by the side of the road. A priest passed by, wouldn't stop. A Levite walked by, wouldn't cross the road. But a Samaritan stopped and got the man up and took him to an inn and paid for his care. Jesus said, that's a neighbor. What he didn't say, because he didn't have to with his audience, was that Samaritans were scum. The man who stopped to help was a Samaritan. I'm not sure we have the equivalent today of a group that we look down on that much. Maybe illegal immigrants in some places, but it was worse than that. Maybe the way we look at terrorists was the way they looked at Samaritans. Samaritans were not considered pure Jews. They were half-breeds, mudbloods in Harry Potter language. But a Samaritan loved his neighbor as himself. He did for the neighbor what he would have done for his family, what he would want done for himself, do unto others. That story is less radical to us than it was at the time. We live on a far more peaceful planet than at any time in human history. Did you know that? Three books came out about a year ago documenting peace on Earth. Not just fewer deaths in war, but just less murder and mayhem in general is all much lower per capita than it used to be. Oh, I'll put a link to that in the newsletter. But the Bible lets us know that people have always been at odds. They have fought and betrayed and hurt each other. Human relationships are the proving ground for spirituality. They're the place it's hardest to hold on to divine consciousness. And the Bible is full of people who wanted God to smite their enemies. Then Jesus came along and said, no, love your neighbor as yourself. So we've been having these workshops here at church about our strengths. About 50 people now have taken the StrengthsFinder survey online. It's been used in the corporate world for about 20 years. It focuses an organization on the strengths of its people, what people naturally do well. We might call our strengths the way that we express God. So we had our third strengths workshop yesterday. And in my small group, a lot of us said we have been criticized in our lives for qualities that showed up as strengths on the test and that we think are strengths. Like being told you think too much. A lot of us are thinkers. It's a strength. It's a good thing. One woman said she has positivity on her list. Kit has positivity on her list. And this person said, well, she's been accused of being Pollyanna. Not in a good way. Oh, you're just being Pollyanna. Positivity is a strength. Several of you are maximizers. You make the most of what you have. You expand it. It grows bigger. And one woman said her children felt pushed when she did that. That they should be more and do more. And she was just being a maximizer. It's a strength. It occurred to me that what I dislike in someone else may actually be one of their strengths. It's what they came here to be. So when we say we want people in this church with different strengths or ethnicity or culture or nationality, they may be different in ways that are uncomfortable. But when Jesus gave this commandment about love, he did not prioritize groups. He didn't say, love your family first. He didn't say, well, the people in your church are better than others. He didn't say, my country right or wrong. In fact, he said, it's easy to love people who are just like you. Try loving your enemies. Everyone, everywhere, even Samaritans, are your neighbors. Love them with your heart and soul. Don't just tolerate or accept them, but embrace them with your heart and soul. I am not always good at this. Fortunately, we don't have to manufacture all the love ourselves. We are wired for divine love. So I brought a visual aid. This is a 59-cent electric socket from Ace Hardware. It is useless plastic just holding it in my hand. The socket has to be connected. Consider this is a human being. I'm not an electrical engineer. I think I know the basics of this. This socket is connected to wires in the wall, and they run outside to the power line. The power line goes to the big transmission lines that march their way back to the power plant. The plant is making electricity by drawing energy from the earth in some way. Coal, oil, water. Nuclear power needs plutonium. Someday we'll be using more wind and solar, but the planet is providing the power. It's the power of the universe, all feeding down, 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 through the lines and into the tiny socket. The current is divine love, and we are the socket. The current flows to us and we are charged. We're animated with divine love. It's our life force. And then we make it available to anyone who connects with us. Pretty cool, huh? That's how love works. Not all the power comes from inside this little socket by itself. We're the little sockets, but we're hooked up to the power of the universe. The love of God is feeding into us, running through us and out into the world. That's where we get enough love to love God with all our heart and soul and ourselves and our neighbors more every day, better all the time. We are wired with the divine. Now, some of us have a dimmer switch. Our love settings may be low. But I believe that can be changed by choice. There are also times when life might flip the circuit breakers for us and cut off the flow for a while, or it feels that way. But we can restore it through prayer and all the spiritual tools and practices we talk about all the time. Take a Sabbath to reconnect. The power lines are always there. We just restore the circuit, let the love flow. So we have defined love as compassion and wisdom. We have said self-love is creating conditions for self-expression, using our talents and strengths to be more fully who we came to be. We love our neighbor no matter who it is, embracing the differences. And we draw love for ourselves and others from our connection to the universe. Divine love flows to us and through us and expresses as us, as you. Which is a lot of power for a little socket. So let's take these thoughts into meditation.
So as we do every time we come to this place, let's just breathe. Allow some of that divine energy to flow in and out through your breath. And allow that energy to move past your breath. Visualize it just by your presence in this room. The chair that you're sitting in. The clothes that you're wearing. Your feet on the new energy of new carpet on a floor. And down through that carpet, down through the foundation, deep, deep, deep. And the energy going elsewhere. Like that light that swirls around you, your aura, out through the top of your head. Uninhibited by a metal roof. It's simply energy. Out into the day, beyond the trees, beyond this hill that we love so dearly. We send that energy out, sometimes very, very brightly. All circuits go. And even on a cloudy day like today, we know that sun energy is still back there behind the clouds. Still lighting the planet. Just as we still light life when we have our own cloudy day. And what we know is that through our spiritual practice, through breathing, through meditation, visioning and visualizing, simply taking those moments to remember. Divine. That we are here to express more of that divinity. And not only do we send out in our doing, in our being, we are here to receive as well. In order to make that circuit complete, we do need to send out and receive. So breathe a little deeper. Open a little wider. Reach a little further for that joy. allow more joy to come towards you. Continue to breathe that joy. And bring yourself back to this space and this time. And let that joy swirl around you. And let's let it out in a song.